Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.
You are listening to the Star Lores podcast. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. It's summertime on some planets.
It's on Hoth.
Yeah.
Summertime on Hoth.
Summertime.
The polar ice caps are melting.
The polar ice caps are melting. I mean, most people are, I guess, on some planets anyway, are still doing the staycation thing at this particular point in their history. We'll get into it on a later episode, eventually. Epidemiology part two. But anyway, the Star Lores guys are, we're heading in for a vacation on sunny Pamina Prime. All I know is that they have a mean shellfish, but just make sure it's got, it's blue with black stripes. Blue with black stripes. You got to remember that.
If you do, wait, is that the poison one or is that not?
That's the not poison one. Just remember, you only want to eat.
And it's not kosher, okay?
It's not kosher.
It is shellfish.
Anyway, so this is our season finale episode. Some Patreon shout outs to Devin and Thomas
And Kyle.
And Kyle, you're
thank you. I'll in post, I'll put a little golf clap there.
Excellent,
just a quiet, gentle.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, our patron. No, but seriously, our patrons, you know, they help us do a lot more with the show and help it to reach more people. And yeah, we are really super appreciative of everyone who financially supports the show, even with as little as $1 a month. It all
goes a long way.
Us, yeah, to keep it encourages us just to keep going, right? Because it's like, should we do this? It's a lot of time, you know. But that little bit, like, just tells us that people actually appreciate it. So
it's more people who've ever read anything I've ever wrote.
So that's. Three people, eh?
Yeah, we're up to three and a half even. So we're going to go through some questions that came up. What was your selection criteria for the questions, Jordan? Was it just whatever the most recent ones were, ones that stood out to you?
Basically, anyone that asks us a question between season one finale and season two finale.
So very difficult to get one of these. You are an elite crew.
Yeah. So our first one is Matt on Instagram, and he said he just listened to the Vader episode, which was 18, I think.
I honestly don't remember all the numbers.
I don't remember our Darth Vader episode.
I just know the title.
We got to get a proper numbering convention going.
And he said, you guys were saying that the reason Qui-Gon didn't disappear after he died was that he never fully completed his training to become one with the Force. He is only able to appear as a Force ghost on highly Force-sensitive planets, but is still able to talk to other Force users. And then Matt also mentioned that this is referenced in the Clone Wars, but he couldn't state what episode. And I couldn't specifically find it, but I believe he's being honest. But any thoughts about that? Do you think that's accurate?
I think that could be. There's a bunch of like obscure sort of sideways Qui-Gon references in the comic books that don't like, they're often not even really part of a major plot or anything. So it's just, you kind of forget it.
Yeah.
So it could well be.
I don't
one of these kinds of things.
It's been a while since I've watched.
Much like Pamina Prime, it's mentioned in one sentence.
In passing, yeah.
In passing, and it's planet.
I did watch all the Clone Wars, but it was a while ago.
Yeah.
I do specifically recall from the I don't know how to say his name. He's like the Russian director that did like the cartoon Clone Wars.
Oh,
before the
sure.
Gennady Tarkovsky or something like that. Yeah, it's like a Russian sounding name.
Yeah.
And in there, Qui-Gon does appear as a Force ghost.
Oh, okay.
So if that's what he's referencing, which would count as Legends, then yes.
Oh, okay.
The other thing, too, is Yoda, at the end of Episode 3, explicitly mentions that he's been communing with Qui-Gon Jinn as well. So
right,
even in the movies.
But doesn't Qui-Gon like speak, though he doesn't appear as a Force ghost?
I believe there's even a cutscene where he is supposed to audibly speak,
and he does audibly speak in Anakin's mind when he's a little bit, or no, it might even have been at Qui-Gon's funeral that he was actually speaking into Anakin's mind at that point and delivering like a prophecy. We quoted it actually in the episode.
So it does appear more than once. So there's definitely backing for it.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to do the canon versus legends comparison too, it gets kind of dodgy because at the end of Rise of Skywalker, Rey starts to hear voices of lots of Jedi.
Right.
Regardless of whatever training they had in this particular technique, right? Like even really obscure Jedi start speaking to her. I think like Luminara Unduli is one of them as well.
Yeah.
So it's just like now it was the floodgates are open. It doesn't matter.
Well, it was literally the same scene as the Harry Potter scene where he faces Voldemort.
I actually never watched Harry Potter.
I've read the book and watched the movie.
Yeah.
But Harry Potter start all the like dead magicians that Voldemort killed like start giving him power and talking to him while he's fighting Voldemort.
I think that just made the movie worse for me.
I kind of laughed when I saw that because I had not that long ago had watched the movie and read the book.
Yeah, and then so suddenly you see it reappear.
I was like, what?
What is this?
Yeah. This is like almost the same
thing. Yeah, and more directly to the canon, like it suddenly this technique doesn't matter anymore because I guess everyone can do it now. Yeah. So, but that's canon, not legends.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good to point that out that apparently Qui-Gon can appear and does talk to people post-death. So
even though he didn't like
do
the Jedi decompose, which is just evaporating sort of.
Okay, Scott on Instagram, he had a couple things to say, but the first point he wanted to make was he was listening to us talk about the Hero with a Thousand Faces on episode 12 in our The Art of Mythmaking episode. And he said, when none of you read it, that was a bit painful. Did any of you get a chance to follow up and read it? And did it change anyone's thoughts on the theory? I only asked because based on your commentary, it was extremely obvious you hadn't read the source material as he addressed much of what you discuss. So I think that's a kind of a fair point.
He called us out. We're guilty.
But also, yes, you know why it was really obvious that we hadn't read the book.
We did say it.
Because we said it at the very beginning of the conversation.
It's true, yeah.
I feel like we were being pretty honest.
At least we're being honest.
We weren't trying to be like deceptive of like
This is my highbrow opinion of it.
But I do think there might be something to be said that perhaps Campbell did address some of the critiques of his theory in his actual writings that we just have never read.
I would like to point out, though, that I thought our... Well, Scott doesn't really give us something specific that we got wrong, which would be helpful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe reading the book would have... Maybe we'd give a really biased read because we hadn't read the book, but, like, not giving us something we can cross-check against the book when we go back and...
More specifically, and read it. Like, but that being said, man, just for your feedback alone, I'll give it a shot. I will go... Seek it out. And
it is on my reading list. I do plan on reading it eventually.
So maybe we'll come back and revisit it maybe in a future episode once we actually work our way through it. And then we'll have another round. And maybe we will have changed our opinions. I'm pretty entrenched, though. I'm not the type
I do now. I consider this a challenge, Scott. This is
personal.
Like, this is like if you go up to like a Southern person in the 1860s. And you like slap them with your glove. It's like now you have to duel. And I consider reading ridiculous long books to be my form of dueling. So
yeah,
I see your challenge.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted.
No, but thanks for the feedback. Yeah. We do appreciate the engagement and keep them coming. Okay, and the second part of Scott's question was, will we ever get a Last Jedi review? When you reviewed The Rise of Skywalker, I felt you all had extremely strong opinions on The Last Jedi. We did, just as a side, we did reference The Last Jedi a few times, but I think it was relevant to the review as well. As someone who thinks the TLJ is maybe the only salvageable film of the new trilogy, I would love to hear your thoughts on it. Why do you all hate it so much? What specifically... do you take issue with? I only asked because I felt certain comments were made about TLJ that I think were just factually untrue, but it's hard to say since it was about The Rise of Skywalker and not The Last Jedi. And I will say we will do a Last Jedi review eventually.
Yeah, we're not going to do it now,
yeah,
but we'll do a dedicated episode.
Yeah, and the only reason why we did the Rise of Skywalker was because the film had just been released and we wanted to kind of ride the wave of everyone watching it and all the social media attention. So if you want to know the real reason why we did the
Being honest again.
Yeah. it was really just because it was like relevant at the time. And then our last review was The Phantom Menace, so we were actually going right back
from the beginning
from the like Star Wars chronological beginning, you know, and then working our way up from there. So we will get to it.
It's
but
probably gonna be the last one
so
guess what, Scott, you're gonna have to listen to every episode until we get there.
And then another thing, you said some comments we said were factually untrue. Again, Sam said this before, but if you tell us exactly what comments you think were untrue, then we can address that. I don't know exactly what you're referring to. Perhaps we did say something that was untrue. I'm totally open to that.
If you can get back to us,
get back to us. I just don't know specifically what we said that may have been untrue, but we could have been wrong about something. Yeah. What are our thoughts on it? I don't know if I want to turn this into a TLJ review episode.
Yeah, I think you can just flat out say I didn't like it.
Yeah,
and then
it was one of my least favorite of all of them.
But. I'll peel the curtain back on the writing process of the Star Lords here. I was sort of against reviewing any of the Disney canon stuff. I thought that if we're doing a Legends-based
podcast,
let's just stick it to Legends, mostly because... I figured it would make my job slightly easier by giving me less to do, i.e. not an additional eight movies or something.
Yeah.
But so the point is, I wasn't really a real fan of it. I don't think it's the most engaging content to like talk about something that just kind of sucks.
is Sam really trying to be nice too. He's really, really
I will say, I will always say this. You can like whatever movie you like.
We don't hate
you.
If you
like
it,
that's totally fine. I'm not like, there's a lot of like, I think within the fandom, a lot of toxicity, like, ooh, if you didn't like it, like there seems to be two sides. Like the people who didn't like it are automatically labeled
like sexist or racist or, for reasons I don't understand. And then the people who do like it are labeled to be like SJWs or leftists or whatever. And it's like
Disney bootlickers.
Yeah, or Disney bootlickers, you know. Yeah. And all that kind of charged language. You can like what you like. Like what you like. I have no... I like bad movies too.
I'm a huge fan of Transformers.
There are good bad movies.
Honestly, that is really kind of my position on the Star Wars Disney movies. Like, I enjoyed all of them, to be honest. I did not think I wasted my money. I just also recognized that, man, that could have been so much better than it was.
Yeah.
But anyway,
and you can hate good movies, or in my what my opinion are good movies.
Or they don't appeal to you. It's just not your interest, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's not a hater raid on anyone who likes the film. It's just personally, I have a hater raid on the film itself, you know? So. Yeah.
Just wait for that episode to come out.
Yeah.
We'll address these points more specifically.
Yeah.
Yes, we will alienate even more people than being obsessed with a science fiction.
I mean, for most people, I think if they're listening to a Legends-specific podcast, they're either in the camp of like nostalgia for the Legends, or they outright hated the Disney stuff too.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's too...
Yeah, do be aware that this is specifically a Star Wars Legends Expanded Universe podcast.
I could see somebody coming in for the first time, like maybe they are listening to it specifically because the Disney movies were the Star Wars movies that they fell in love with. Like,
yeah.
They had that same experience
that
we had when we were 6 years old and we first saw Star Wars.
Absolutely.
And so they just skip to the review of that and then they hear us crapping on it. I am sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. There are people who did enjoy the Disney stuff and are listening to us as well. And I mean, we don't want to necessarily alienate you, but this is our opinion.
Yeah, for sure. Sam, do you want to do this last one? Josh on Facebook.
So I said that Anakin lost his, or Anakin's Shmi Skywalker rather, gambled possession of herself and Anakin away, and I just got that confused with Gardulla, because the conversation where that happens in The Phantom Menace, and when sort of it's brought up again, sort of the pronouns got mixed, and I heard she and just losing and gambling, and then I assumed, transposed it, and I'm like, oh yeah.
I did fight you on that one. So.
Yeah, and that's what I also mentioned. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you guys called me out on it on air. So yes.
So Gardulla the Hutt did in fact sell Anakin and Shmi.
And Shmi was not an irresponsible mother.
No, she was a good mom.
You slander her
in a bad position. Sorry, Shmi. I love your accent.
All right, cool.
But good. Good job, Josh. Thanks for listening and paying attention and reaching out.
As penance, Sam, you have to write the Shmi episode.
Yes, now you're getting a Shmi biography episode. This one's going 5,000 words for sure.
You 2 hours long.
Oh, boy.
We're going to have guests on. I told you before, what is Watto to Shmi, Christian? What is he? He's a... What is... He's your leather daddy.
Oh, my
you. Okay, so now we're just going to go through sort of our greatest hits, I guess. These were some just conversation highlights from a bunch of episodes from season 2 that we'll just sort of bring up again. Maybe explore in detail some things I sort of wish I could have got into on the episode, but then that I don't think are going to make it into any episodes like in the next season or two. So we'll just get into a little bit more detail and talk about it. Our last episode, because it's probably fresh in your minds, Galactic Epidemiology. Was there anything that you guys remember? I know like Imperial engineered bioweapons, that's a huge topic in and of itself.
Yeah,
there's the Kratos virus, right? I didn't even mention that when I talked about Isard, that she also engineered
a virus,
a bioweapon, which is awful.
Yeah, they're
and it was a bioweapon in Bacta. It was infected Bacta, which is like extra evil, right? She polluted and the entire galaxy's medical
that's
supply.
A good way to do it though, if you're gonna do it.
Yeah, no, it's very efficient. Like I said, she's a very dangerous lady. and very competent as well. Yeah. Much more so than St. Pestridge.
That's actually the most dangerous kind of person, is a competent,
dangerous person.
Person. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. If you're going to be evil, at least be stupid. For the rest of us. Anything about the Imperial Remnant? Again, we talked about Ysanne Issard. I think she was one of the standout characters in the Rogue Squadron comic book series.
She's got a big fan base, too. Like, we got a lot of feedback for her when we posted her little lore bio.
And I'm totally with those people. She's a lot of fun. She beats up, like, assassin droids in her spare time. It's pretty cool. And, tries to decimate entire populations.
Yep. Seems to be a running theme.
And also, I'm like always sort of debating on when and if we're going to do our war crimes episode, because that could literally be the longest episode in the Star Wars.
Star Wars is just riddled with.
It's all war crimes.
And everyone is guilty of something.
Yeah, you can call it the Black Book of the Empire.
That's a great name.
Yeah. Get to writing soon.
Yeah, I got to go.
One thing on the Remnant episode too, I wanted to mention, I kind of just generally for the podcast, I really wanted to contrast a little bit between the canon and Legends. I know not everyone's a big fan of that, but just to see some elements are definitely lifted from Legends, and it seems to be like an ongoing thing that people who are newly introduced to Star Wars through Disney, they see these new concepts and like, oh yeah, that's cool, that's unique, that's original. And then like a lot of the older fans are like, oh, I remember the other version of that. And just with it comes up a lot even in the Mandalorian TV series, the Fracturing of the Empire and the Battlefront video game, they have things like Operation Cinder and the warlords that take over in the Mandalorian. Both of those elements from like that Fractured Empire, definitely.
Yeah, and even the costume design, like the stormtroopers have like lost their discipline.
Yeah, all rusted out
and weathered armor and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of that comes from directly from the Legends universe.
And I was even, just to pile on there a little bit with the Remnant or the New Order, even that arc is very similar in the comic books to the movies, because in that the Republic at one point were reduced from like having 600,000 worlds down to 3,000 worlds in that like 4 to 12 ABY period, like right after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
They did get powerful, but then they were almost completely wiped out again. And then the Imperial Remnant became a force to be reckoned with and the dominant force in the galaxy, which is exactly what the New Order did in the Disney movies, right? Yeah.
And even with...
As we just read, what Kathleen Kennedy, I read, said is that in like the second sentence about it, she's like, nope, we had no comics.
No source material.
No comics. Yeah. And I literally know all of this from reading the Star Wars comics.
Yeah.
Tisk, Kathleen.
Further to that, too, with Palpatine's reemergence and having the secret world of Exegol, too... Very similar to the clone Palpatine reemergence and the secret world of Biss, and having his
almost exactly the same one, yeah. I'd say. Yeah. And even the much more occult, like almost medieval, like evil black wizard setting, and like the grim dark and
Dungeons and Dragons,
and the fact that they're doing like actual ritual spells, which is very different from how you see the Force used in the Star Wars universe. And that's just another alliteration to Star Wars comic books. Yeah. Right?
So
that's exactly what Biss was. It was an entire world of people who were religious goths who were really into Palpatine. In the Heir to the Empire comic book, although the Dark Side Force adepts were very lame and terrible and got their butts really kicked easily, they had some great goth fashion.
They get 10 out of 10 for style points.
If you like Joy Division or The Crow, you'll love that specific section of Heir to the Empire.
Yeah. Cool.
Just on Darth Sidious, that was like one of my favorite episodes to write, because I thought he was sort of the best example of hypertext fiction. in like his whole arc, you have to actually engage with comic books, video games, movies, everything to actually
get a complete picture.
Get the picture that we talked about in that episode. So that was fun for me. But also Naboo's government in the Darth Plagueis novel, it's revealed that it's very much like a Platonic society, like the kind of thing that Plato specifically described in Utopia is sort of how Naboo's government ran, because there's like, although people were elected by a popular vote, the people who could be elected were of noble birth, and they were sort of
dynastic,
and they were sort of trained
to be politicians
from their very young age to be politicians. And on Naboo, that's what Palpatine did when he was a boy. He joined the civil service when he was like 12. Yeah. Right?
And actually it comes up with Padme a lot too. Padme's whole life has been politics, right? Even from childhood, she even mentions in the movies that right away she went into the...
And so Plato called those people the guardians. So the kings and all the kings and queens, the monarchs of Naboo are essentially Platonic guardians, which I thought was cool that it seemed like that was probably on purpose, but that's like a deep cut into Greek philosophy, and I like that.
Yeah, no, that's sweet. Whoever wrote those elements of it definitely knew what they were trying to insert.
Very good. Yeah. And works well with like Naboo's architecture being sort of like Roman, because it
was romantic,
sort of all based on Sicily.
It's like Renaissance.
Stuff. Yeah.
I believe some of the shots are from Sicily. You can go to some of the places.
It's all a lot of the Naboo stuff anyway is shot in Italy, the place where Anakin proposes to Padme, I believe, is like at some castle on a lake in Italy. It sounds very nice. I'd like to do some Star Wars tourism at some.
Yeah. Do they have sand?
No. Because you can find, actually, speaking of sand, in the Moroccan desert, you can find Luke's Adobe house. It's in the Moroccan desert.
I wish I knew that when I really? I've actually been to Morocco. They have a huge movie studio there. They shoot like almost any movie that supposedly takes place in the Middle East takes place in Morocco.
Yeah, like Indiana Jones was shot a lot of it.
Yes,
there,
Indiana Jones. So I went to a studio there. They had a Game of Thrones. They had the castle from Kingdom of Heaven. They had a bunch of Bible movies, because they shoot a lot of like Nazareth scenes there. Gladiator. Some of the shots they have are like from an ancient city they have there. It was really cool. They have like a whole, they call it like the Little Hollywood. Definitely would recommend.
Sorry. Luke's house is like really cool though, because it's sort of isolated. I think it's like really in the middle of the desert, like it's not in a studio or anything.
Is it in Morocco or in Tunisia?
Oh, it might be Tunisia. Yeah. Yes, you're right, because Tatooine
is in Tunisia.
Named after Tunisia.
Yeah. Sorry, that just clicked in my mind.
Yeah. Dirge from Bounty Hunters.
Yeah,
he's super cool and like didn't really do him right. But it doesn't seem like we're going to do a Dirge-specific episode anytime soon. So I just wanted to highlight some things from Wikipedia about him. So he acquired a deep distaste for Mandalorians, and he even killed a Mandalore himself, which is pretty insane. But that Mandalore is unnamed. Like all we know is that his name was Mandalore, and that basically just means king. So that's interesting.
He has a mythosaur skull on his chest. Do you know the story behind that?
It's was it Jaing? Was that the guy who? Yeah. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his name. J-A-I-N-G. But he trained him. He was a Mandalorian, but then the Mandalorians did some genocide or something.
Yeah, and they killed his mentor / friend. And
right.
And tortured him for a long time, and so he became crazy and genocidal against Mandalorians. Cool side story. I don't know if it's cool, but when we were kids, when episode 2 was coming out, and they always do a big release of like action figures and stuff prior to when the movie comes out. So there's a lot of speculation surrounding these new characters and all that. Dirge, they made an action figure that came out before episode 2 came out. So you got glimpses of him, and no one knew like who he was. And he doesn't actually appear in episode 2. He comes out a lot more in the EU stuff around the comic books and Tarkovsky's Clone Wars as well. And when we were younger, we always thought that was going to be Boba Fett appearing, like, because he had the Mythosaur skull on his chest, right? Yeah. So just, it would have been that always stuck with me. I kind of wish he was Boba Fett.
He's like honestly almost as great a character as Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Another cool thing about him is that his species, the Gendai, I did a little research on them. They have no skeletons. So they're just these gigantic amorphous masses of muscle.
Yeah.
And they really look like something you'd see in a Clive Barker movie. Which is very scary, but then they can like form themselves into any shape they want.
Yeah.
So they usually just like get humanoid shaped body armor and then fit into that.
Squeeze themselves in. Yeah. And further to that, even they're really hard to kill because of that as well.
Yeah.
I believe they don't have a central nervous system so that, you know, you blow off an arm or leg or head even and they keep coming at you.
Yeah. It's a very interesting, that would be a very expensive thing to do. Like in terms of biology, I think just to move around just under like muscle power and not using any sort of mechanical leverage that we get from our skeletons.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of animals that are like that, and like things like jellyfish come to mind, but
they're not muscle.
That's exactly it. They're
octopi, but octopi are a lot of like empty space, I think, except for their tentacles. Hmm. I'm not sure.
Octopi-based life form.
Maybe, yeah. The Bounty Hunter Wars, that was a confusing one for me in the episode anyway. It always seemed a little bit muddy. So just some clarity on that. Prince Xizor actually started it off. He urged Palpatine to destroy the guild in order to benefit his struggle for power. After accepting Xizor's idea, Palpatine sent Boba Fett to join the Bounty Hunter's guild at the time under the leadership of Cardassk. And then Boba Fett went on to sort of destroy the Bounty Hunters Guild by being super competitive, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's like, I think there's even a trilogy of novels
yeah.
that detail the Bounty Hunter Wars.
Yeah.
More Mando trivia. Anything you want to talk about in terms of Mandalorians?
I really
there's so much.
I want to do a Mandalorian specific episode. So
you could do like 10 of them.
Yes.
You could almost do a Mandalorians podcast. There's so much lore.
Almost
about
like
the
it was the inspiration for the logo. Almost like that's really what I wanted to talk about this whole time.
So season 3 is just actually that's the reveal. Yes,
it's going to be just Mandalorians.
Just Mandalorians.
You know what? From this point forward, it's just going to be Mandalorians.
We're just going to be called Manda. Lore. Yeah.
That's actually already a YouTube channel. I tried to swoop in on that.
Dang.
Shout out to that channel, by the way.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that sort of hit the cutting room floor in our Han Solo episode because he had so many random adventures. Just any of that, I don't know, stick out to you guys. Fighting pirates called Blood Scars. And
I feel like a lot of the writing around the sort of EU, early on EU writing around Han Solo was a lot like, what do you call them? Like those old sci-fi magazines.
Pulp,
weekly adventure type. Flash Gordon-esque.
Yeah,
absolutely. That is what they're like.
And it's exactly what the inspiration was.
Yeah.
That's Lucas's true, original inspiration. Yeah. And then Marvel, being Marvel in the 70s or 80s, fashioned the comics after the original kind of Flash Gordon serials, right?
Yeah.
So, a lot of it is kind of hard to follow. Even talking about the epidemiology episode, I read all the Marvel stuff like a while ago here. Honestly, not my favorite version of Star Wars. It's some people who are nostalgic for that kind of era of science fiction.
There is some good stuff in there, but
there's also a lot of bad.
just not even bad, but not good. It's just like
forgettable.
Yeah, you know, and I've read a lot of old comics too, like not just Star Wars, but you know, from all the way from the 40s to like this 70s and 80s, and honestly, like I feel like Frank Miller and Alan Moore like really upped the comic book writing game, because before that
they matured it a lot.
Yeah, there was just a lot of cheap kind of stories and stuff. Not all of it was bad, but oh yeah, there you go. You got an Alan Moore book.
This is why I can't read Hero's Journey.
That's a pretty long hefty book.
It's because I have to read this Alan Moore book, which is 1,300 pages long.
I like the cover, though. That's a sweet cover.
Yes, Alan Moore is a good
He's a good writer.
I'm actually a big fan of Alan Moore too.
Yeah. I like him too, but there was just so much of that.
They could have used some Alan Moore.
Alan Moore Star Wars? Yeah.
If Disney will hire him to write the script, I'm okay with another trilogy.
Yeah. Like, what's his name? Stan Lee. He tried to do it a little bit to make a more cohesive universe, but it was still like just so everything was so cliched and immature, like you're saying. Yeah. You know, it's very childish in a lot of ways.
It's funny to see Star Wars evolve like that, kind of feeding off of that into the Shadows of the Empire era, kind of like with the comics industry. They went from like pulpy to like the really dark 90s muscle bound heroes that got like really like
antisocial.
Yes.
They're all doing drugs and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. And they're almost like overcompensating.
Yeah.
And then they kind of like mature out later on.
Yeah.
And kind of like in Star Wars, it kind of follows that arc of like that pulpy science fiction. They get like really gritty Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
And even the early Clone Wars stuff was really trying to drive at like this dark war, you know, Vietnam War-esque kind of feel, which I love personally. Yeah, yeah. I really love the Clone Wars for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting to watch all these franchises be written in different eras and
evolve with the times. Yeah.
But it gives you a lot of funny stories that you get in like
the early Marvel.
The Han Solo mythology.
Yes. You know. And you can see writers kind of like, well, now this is canon, so we kind of have to work with it.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
There's like almost a full episode worth of random one-off spaceships in the early Marvel comic books, but they're actually great to look at. Like, and there's like just 500 different ones never appear anywhere else in the whole
universe. Just like an artist just scribbled one in really quick and then like never re-referenced it again.
So scum and villainy, there's a lot of stuff you could go on to, especially about like economics and sort of the law and states and that kind of thing.
There's a lot of political subtext with Star Wars. Star Wars almost exists, usually it's portrayed as like a black and white Empire Rebellion type scenario, but then you also consistently have this third party, which is the underworld. And often like rides that gray area where you have like characters like Han Solo, which are like good slash bad guys, unconventional good guys, I should say. And then you have like true villains who also operate in the underworld that aren't the Empire, who are either, you know, going after their own political or economic gain, right? People like Jabba the Hutt, who's definitely a villain of Star Wars, but not the villain of Star Wars. And yeah, it just kind of speaks to the political narrative of Star Wars in the sense of like, you know, what drives the galactic economy. You have the Empire that works alongside the underworld often. They're often represented as like the law and order. So if you can give the Empire props, it's because it's like, oh, well, they're bringing stability. But on the flip side, on the underside, they're, you know, they're on the dole. They're funding weapons and research and all this backdoor stuff, which often happens in real life as well. You have like people portray their own governments as the good guys, and then it turns out, you know, they have all these secret operations that they're running illegally in foreign.
They're like funding radical Islamic groups in the Middle East to fight other radical Islamic groups.
Or they're smuggling drugs on behalf of cartels while fighting cartels. Or, you know,
I think that's best, or a good example of it is the banking clan, the intergalactic banking clan. They were they a front for Higo Damask? He was involved with them.
No, he had Damask Holdings.
He had Damask Holdings.
But a lot of Moons, so Higo Damask was a Moon. They are bankers. Yeah. And so they...
Which is...
it's not. Don't go there. It's...
interesting how George Lucas went there. LucasArts.
Lucas is clearly like very political in his writings. And even like the whole corporate sector, like the corporations are often painted in a bad light.
Well, and specifically anyone who sort of critiques like American capitalism, it's like bankers are sort of at the center.
The big bads.
They often get scapegoated, rightly or wrongly, for whatever the situation
might be. And
then in terms of the Trade Federation, it's like, imagine if Walmart had an army.
A private army. That's essentially what it is, right? You have these private entities who can rival the government. And not to say that isn't a risk, right? Like, I'm very anti-corporatist state and anti-monopoly, right? And that's those are the legitimate dangers that come up.
In our galaxy, I think the corporation most likely to be like the Trade Federation is Disney. They will use all of their stormtrooper props to take over the world.
So they can, you know, it's honestly Disney or Amazon.
Stream Disney Plus straight into our brains.
Yeah. So there's definitely an anti-corporatist bent, obviously. Yeah. And then you have other, and the thing is too, is because Star Wars has so many diverse authors, some of them try to challenge some of those narratives and add a little more balance to it, where they're like, well, with the Confederacy all bad, you know, some of them were just planets trying to operate independently of the Republic, who they saw as a repressive force that, you know, came into their native land, took it, and forced them to join this galactic community that they didn't really want to be a part of. The Republic is just as guilty as being corrupted by the big corporations. They allowed the big corporations to gain and solidify so much power to begin with. A lot of their politicians were on the dole by these corporations as well. So
I was going to say, like, a lot of the senators are essentially just puppets of corporations, or like, in fact, CEOs of corporations,
right, exactly.
And senators.
And,
well, I think also the reverse is true. Corporations are puppets for a lot of, like, Palpatine himself.
Right. So then you go into the Imperial side of it, where they kind of nationalize a bunch of stuff. Yeah, and then, so it, all these very complex elements
it's a
are
big mess, the social economics of Star Wars.
I love it personally. And I'm happy that it's there. That
it is sort of like real life.
Yeah, know? Exactly.
No, it's very,
it makes the universe real. You know, it's not
believable.
Just, exactly.
Yeah. Cinema verita, I guess is the art critique term.
Yeah.
Other things, a million notes on that. Philosophy of the Force. I thought that was one of the cooler episodes, and I want to get back.
Yeah, that was from our first run.
Yeah, from the first season. That was before I was even on the show, I think.
Yep.
And that was fun. And that, getting more into the esoteric Force stuff is
where, it's interesting.
Where Star Wars is really fun for me. That's, I think that's better than the politics.
There's a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah, there's something that's the for beauty everyone. Of
it. Yes. One thing on that note, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. I totally forgot about Qui-Gon Jinn's name is a very obvious reference to Qui-Gon or
Qi-Gon,
which is
Chi
energy.
Yeah. So there's two things in there, right? There's just the Chi part, which is kind of a Chinese Taoist principle for basically the Force. And then there's also the practice of qi cultivation, which is called qigong, which is like that was a very poor pronunciation, I'm sure, but it's like an internal martial art. It's like Tai Chi, basically. It's very slow, rhythmic movements, and it's how you basically cultivate the real world version of the Force. If you're going to be a Jedi in real life, you would have to do qigong.
Yeah. And I might be reaching with this. It's kind of hard with Star Wars sometimes. But his last name, Jin, I'm really, really going to put like a lot of salt with this one. Because maybe it's a very obscure reference that someone's trying to put in. Or maybe I'm reading into it. I'm totally open to either being possible. But yes, the idea of Jin in Hindu and Islamic religion is... they're angels and demons, and they have a very like duplicitous nature, a very secret nature.
Yeah.
But if you know the character of Qui-Gon as well, he's like the gray Jedi in the sense of like, he doesn't play by the rules. Yeah. He can go either way. If you're a hardline Jedi, he looks like a bad guy to you. Yeah. Right. And on the reverse side, if you're, you know, more to leaning towards the dark side, he looks
from
like
my
a good
point
guy
of
to
view.
You. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, but
it's an interesting thought experiment.
Yeah.
Jinn are also interesting just in like the Persian mythology because of their place. They do things that are similar to Jedi, right? Jinn are all magical. There's sort of this third class of being outside of angels, outside of humans, sort of invisible, but they still have this weird power. And some Jinn are even Muslims, so they're like the good guys in that mythology.
Yeah.
And then there are other jinns who are like the servants of Shaitan and stuff, just like there's
like demons
or Sith and Jedi, angels, demons. So they're, but they use magic just like the
Force,
Jedi.
Yes. So cool.
Yeah. The Sith also, oh man. After we do Manda lore, then we're just going to pivot into a podcast only about the Sith. on fear. That's a very important thing. I don't think I read this quote out, and it's an H.P. Lovecraft quote. It's his most famous one. The oldest and strongest emotion of mankind is fear. And the oldest and strongest kind of fear is fear of the unknown. So this is sort of the roots of the Sith's philosophy, I think, in that pulp science fiction genre. Is that something that H.P. Lovecraft really contributed to and influenced? He was dead sort of by the 50s and the 60s when that pulp sci-fi became a really big economic force.
Yeah.
But by that time, people had discovered this obscure writer. And so all the pulp writers were sort of reading H.P. Lovecraft. And then so Star Wars is kind of like the grandchild in a weird way, I think, of H.P. Lovecraft and his particular brand of horror, as is literally every horror movie you've ever seen, basically is just doing H.P. Lovecraft stories.
Yeah, especially the older ones, like you said, like the less slasher, but the more like fear of the unknown.
Yeah,
anything where you don't with, see like, the monster.
And anything with like occult powers or witches and that kind of stuff, that's all very Lovecraftian ideas. So that's fun, just seeing the origins of things.
Yeah.
Leia, I wonder how many confirmed kills she has. Yes.
If anyone has kept the tally, please let us know.
I really want to know that. And if there's some Wikipedia page I can find that like tallies all the major heroes' like kills throughout Legends, I think Leia might, like, even between her, Han, and Luke, I think Leia's killed the most people.
Really?
Like, she's...
Are you counting things like blowing up the barge, too?
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. So everyone on that barge also counts as a kill.
But she does stuff like that all throughout, especially the Marvel run.
She is a political radical, you have to remember.
I've said it before, she's a terrorist. She might have been right, she was still a terrorist.
It's... Yep. No comment.
It's an uncomfortable truth. Don't put me in free speech jail. All right, get your special sunblock on. What kind of shellfish were we eating, Christian?
Red and yellow. Nope.
Oh, crap.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Oh, I've got Parvati syndrome. Ah! May the forks be with you.